and there's probably a couple more.
Oh, well, oops. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening,
we continue in the Rambam. Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Chav Dalet, Halacha Yud Aleph, Chapter 24, Law 11, in the Maznaim text, page 236 and 237. We're talking now about a katan, a young child. Halacha Yud Aleph, katan she'osa b'Shabbos davar shu mishum shvus. If a child does an activity that is prohibited normally because of shvus, this is this rabbinic prohibition of doing certain things that either look like a malacha, will lead to a malacha, all the things we've been talking about in the last two chapters, right? So if a child does a shvus, which is rabbinically usher, kigon, for example, I don't know why they picked these two examples. I have no idea what the Rambam chose.
Something a kid would really do.
Kigon, shetolash me'atzit she'enu nokuv. He plucks something out of a flower pot that doesn't have a hole in it. Okay? Now, in other words, when you pull something out of the ground, that's biblically prohibited, right? That's what do you call it? Harisha.
Right. Oh, I call it
plowing, right? Now, a flower pot is technically, biblically, it's not prohibited to pull out of a flower pot because it's not connected to the ground.
If there's a hole in the
flower pot, somehow the rabbis understand it nurtures still from the ground, and then it would be biblical. I don't want to go there. It's a law of throwing. It's a law of throwing. No, if you have a flower pot with a hole in it,
On the ground. It's not going to nurse.
But now, if you have a flower pot that's without a hole, right, that is only rabbinically prohibited to pull out. Because it's not biblically, it's not coming from the ground, from the earth. So it's rabbinically. So let's say the kid pulled it out of a plant, out of a flower pot. So that's only rabbinically also. I mean, if every example to bring, I don't know why, there must be something deep to this, but anyway. Oh, tiltal bakarmelis.
Not as deep as the roots.
Yes,
of
it, huh? Or he carries in a karmelis, which we know is rabbinically, a karmelis is rabbinically prohibited to carry. So now, if you see a kid doing this, ain bezdin mitzuvim lafrisho, bezdin is not commanded to separate him from continuing that activity. In other words, the whole idea is, if you see a child doing something wrong, are you obliged to stop him from doing it? That is the overall question. And generally speaking, as we'll see, Rambam will say, if you see a child is doing something rabbinically biblically prohibited, a father has an obligation to stop him. A child. Now, even though it's a child, but a child has to be trained in doing mitzvahs. You see a child is plowing in the field on Shabbos, that's biblical prohibition. The father says you can't plow on Shabbos, and you stop him. Now, what if, and what about a Bezdin? So we'll see, it would appear from the Rambam, a Bezdin doesn't necessarily have to get involved with kids. But now the kid is doing a rabbinic thing that's prohibited. So the bezin is not obligated to separate him. And similarly, what about the father? Well, the father should stop him from doing something that's rabbinically osur. But what if he doesn't do anything about it? Like, what if a father isn't a good father? He doesn't stop his kid from doing averus. Well, the bezin would start to force him. Hey, you know, you're not teaching your children the right way. So let's say it's a biblical aver. Kid's plowing on Shabbos. So it's the father's job to stop him. Not the bezin's, the father's. But the bezin sees the father's not doing it. So they say, listen, dad, you better start shaping up and take care of this boy of yours and tell him to stop. But now we're dealing with a rabbinic problem. So rabbinically, the rabbis are not involved anyway. But what about the father? Well, the father really should tell him to stop, but what if he doesn't? If the father lets him do the rabbinic prohibition, ein memachim biyodo, the bezin does not protest and tell him what to do. All right? So therefore, that is, he can continue to do it. In other words, it's not the nicest thing that the father lets him do it, but the bezin doesn't have to stop him. So the Rambam in other places, he goes through this in a much deeper, more elaborate way. He says, for example, when a minor eats forbidden food or does a forbidden labor on Shabbos, the court does not have to restrain him because he's not of an intellectual majority. The bezin doesn't have to get involved. However, when does it apply? When the child acts on his own initiative. Now, certainly, we can't feed a kid tray food. You can't make, you know, say, here, go plow, right? You don't encourage him to do this thing, right? So that we don't have him do it, but the rabbis don't have to stop it. Now, although the court's not obliged to do this, the father's obliged to rebuke him and to train him to do things according properly. Okay, so it comes out, according to the Rambam, a court is never obliged to restrain a child, even in a biblical way, let alone a rabbinic.
child. What age are we talking about?
Well, I guess it's trainable.
So six
and under? A little child is b'chlal not an issue. Right. We're talking about a kid who's trainable.
So 6 to 9. A
6 and older, yeah.
But 12?
Again, it's all, you should. The Bezin's out and doesn't have to. Bezin doesn't have to. He's a cotton. It's the father. The issue is the father. Now, the father's obliged to educate him, and if he fails to do so, the court will rebuke him because you're not doing what's proper. So that we're saying, the Rambam is saying, if it's only rabbinic law and the father doesn't do it, then the Bezin's not obliged to rebuke the father either, because really it's just training. Father has a mitzvah to train the child. So for biblical mitzvahs, the Bezin has to rebuke the father to train the child. But for rabbinic, we don't force the father we don't rebuke the father to train the child. That's what I'm saying.
Let's just finish.
Discounting the rabbinic to some extent.
It's not discounting. If it's just rabbinic, again, there's leniencies. It's not really usher. It's not really usher. It's the rabbis. So how far do the rabbis impose their law? Now, although this is the Rambam's opinion, and it is also brought down by the Shulchan Aruch, but the Ramah has a different opinion. And he says, when a child reaches an age where it's fit to educate him in doing mitzvahs, then it falls on the court as well. So the Ramah disagrees with the Rambam, and therefore they're obligated to restrain him from transgressing Jewish law as well.
Because it seems like the problem with the Rambam's opinion is that how will the kid learn not to do rabbinic prohibitions once they reach majority if he hasn't been taught?
Well, he's supposed to be taught. The question is, how far does the Beis Din go in reprimanding the father? Remember, there's only so much you can legislate.
Right.
You gotta remember, it's parents are strange people many times. So the Beis Din, can't enforce everything as much as they would want to.
I guess my point is, as an adult, you're not really meant to distinguish between Torah and rabbinic prohibitions on the
right. So now the question is, so for a kid already, where b'chlal the kid has no biblical obligation in mitzvahs at all. Remember, a child is not obliged in mitzvahs.
From chinuch,
so it's just chinuch.
Yeah.
So that's not, so how far are we going to be? So Ram is saying, for biblical things we make a big deal to train, but for rabbinic we don't.
So I take it the Ramah's position is the position that Howard and I are trying to say.
Yeah, well, we try to train him and we try to stop him. A good parent would stop him in everything. Obviously, a good parent would stop him. Even the Rambam would agree a good parent stops him from transgressing rabbinic. What if he's being, lax in it? Okay, so Ramo is saying, can you imagine if we'd have to do this now? If we poskin this way now, we take away half the kids.
And what if the kids over?
Interesting. I had a Shiloh once from somebody many years ago. Many years ago, somebody asked, this grandmother asked me a question. She had a grandchild. And the daughter-in-law is teaching was an FFB but not so learned. Okay, so
and the grandmother was what? From
the grandmother was a Baal Tshuva.
So
the grandchild now is learning to make brachas, and the mother was teaching the kid the wrong brachas. And then the grandmother wanted to teach the right brachas, but the daughter-in-law didn't want to hear nothing from her mother-in-law. Do you understand?
Yes.
So then the mother-in-law asked me, what should they do? What should she do? So I say, butt out. You know what I mean? So, you have an example where you want, parents are very weird when it comes to this. I decide, what to tell my child and this and that. So it's not easy for Beis Dins to interfere. I mean, there's a lot of emotions.
We're only talking about children under 13, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying there's a lot of emotions involved. In the good old days, the Beis Din would go in and just take them away from you, and the parents have nothing to say. Nowadays, we don't really have that kind of a Beis Din, so it's not so simple.
Over 13, the Beis Din would get
it's not older. Children, it's an adult.
It's responsible.
Now the Beis Din goes straight to the kid. What are you doing? You can't do Averos.
That's right.
Okay, but we don't have this power of Beis Din anymore, so it kind of, the law practically today falls into disuse because we don't have a Beis Din. Okay, from now on, Yud Beis, the end of this parak, and the entire next parak, which is long, and the following parak as well. Yes, it's going to be all on Muktzah. Okay, so it's the next.
So they don't just touch the subject.
Yes, good. So that's all Muktzah. So we're going to be on this probably, I'd say, for a good month. You can calculate about a month for Muktzah. Okay.
What's it going to take? Really,
things get easier. Muktzeh is interesting, and then it's it gets much. And then we get to some hard stuff, and then the last perk is easy. So, let's get moving. Yud Beis. This is all just philosophy. The next two halachas. The rabbis prohibited a person to move certain things on Shabbos in a way that you normally would move them in the weekday. In the weekday you could move things, but certain things like that you cannot move in Shabbos. Now, let us look at, and this is what is called muktzah. So, this...
Rabbi, you're wording there, though. You said move.
Move. I didn't say touch. I said move.
But there's a difference between move and carry.
Caring is a different thing. Caring is from one. Well, really, it wouldn't be the appropriate translation. Carry has connotations of Erev and this and that. I mean, you could use the word carry, but it really is move. What I mean to in contradistinction to touching. Okay, you could touch anything. The problem is when you move it. You know, what if I do this? Did I carry it?
No, but you moved it.
Okay, this is muktzah, right? This tape recorder is definitely muktzah. 100% muktzah?
100%.
Okay, now, can I do this on Shabbos?
No.
Am I carrying it?
No.
So what am I doing?
Moving it.
Moving it. So that's why I'm saying it's movement as opposed to carrying. It doesn't have to be as much as carrying, but it's much more than touching. So I was pretty precise in the word I said. Well, you know, I don't know how, you know.
You can send a letter to the editor.
You know, it's not wrong. I'm not going to say it's wrong, but it's not precise.
Right. Because you know, if you just stuck with carrying, you
now,
sound like
some movements are allowed. Like, let's say, Martin, can I do this on Shabbos?
Wait. Okay. You see, that's irregular.
That's an irregular movement. Right? But simple movement like that is not allowed on Shabbos. So that's the better translation.
Is distinguishing carrying and moving, because if you're stuck with carrying, it would sound like you could move, because moving isn't carrying.
What?
If we said carrying, then it would sound like you could do that.
Yeah, okay, true. Right? And carrying connotes from one rishus to another rishus, also. And has nothing to do with carrying from one rishus to another, to be in your house.
Carrying usually connotates a kinyan also that you acquire.
Yeah, so it's just movement. Now, it's interesting, the source for this is the Gemara in Shabbos that says the following. Rabbi Chanina, it's interesting to understand the background. Very fascinating. Gemara says like this. In the times of Nehemiah, the prophet Nehemiah, when he brought the Jewish people back with the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, this idea of muktzah was introduced. That's when it was started. It wasn't an old one on the books. This was relatively new, so to speak. He introduced the idea, and it says in Nehemiah, it says, he saw in his days in Yehuda that people were working on Shabbos. They were bringing people back from the Golos, right? 70 years of Golos will do it to you, man. They intermarried, and they were working on Shabbos and all these things. He bring them back, he's got to make some corrective measures. So therefore, they said, most utensils can't even be moved. Why? Because since they were so lax in Shabbos, he had to go to the other extreme. They think they can do anything on Shabbos. So he said, you know what? Forget about working on Shabbos. You can't even move things on Shabbos that were even permitted things. Now, he was so strict, they prohibited moving everything except for 3 utensils. And the only 3 utensils that a person had to have was a knife, a spoon, and another kind of knife, like a sharp knife, let's say, I'll call it like a butter knife, a steak knife, and a spoon. Because those utensils, they didn't use forks in those days. In other words, those, the only things they allowed them to use. Now don't ask me what they ate on, but
it was a plate.
I don't know. But the mamish made it very little. And they were like, and other things, like they, and wouldn't let you carry other things. Why? Because they wanted to know, it's Shabbos! So then as time passed, and they saw that people were getting a little bit more careful in their Shabbos observance, they relaxed a few more items. And then as time passed, Shabbos was still being kept, they relaxed a few more items. And then they said, as a matter of fact, you can now carry everything except a certain amount of items. It went to the other extreme. It started, you can't carry anything except for just a couple of mamish basic necessities. Then they started, okay, we'll let you carry this too, we'll let you carry this too, we'll let you carry this too, till it finally came to the point where really you can carry everything, and now we keep the basic exceptions that are called muktzah, and that's what we have today. So you should think, if you think it's bad now, it was worse before. So you're getting it as easy as it can be.
I mean, is that only because he was a prophet and could make these changes?
Like, no, it was a Bezdin. Like, it was a Bezdin. It was the right. Bezdin. It was the Sanhedrin.
We can't do that now.
We can't do nothing now.
What were people doing that he didn't want them to do?
They were Machal Shabbos.
Working on
they
Shabbos.
Were plowing. They were working in the wine press. They were carrying sheaves on their backs on Shabbos. They were being Machal Shabbos. They married shiksas. I mean, what do you want, man? Nechemiah made them, as Nechemiah made them divorce all their shiksas before they came back.
Only 40,000 came back.
Yeah,
and they were intermarried.
And yeah, so it's pretty
and
bad.
They made them divorce their wives.
Right, so anyway, so they were being Machal Shabbos. They had to come to the other extreme. So that's the history of Muktzah. Now, what is the reason for this? The Rambam is going to give us the reasons. We're going to see that in a minute. But the Ravid is going to argue, and he's going to say the reason is because we're afraid maybe if you carry everything in the house or move everything in the house, you may come to carry things outside the house and you'll transgress the prohibition of carrying. Okay? That's the Ravid's opinion. That's not the Rambam that we're going to learn in a minute. Now, the question is, but wait a minute. If the whole reason not to carry, then we shouldn't carry anything in your house. In other words, once you're carrying a few things, then how are you going to draw the line? So he says, well, they didn't make decrees on utensils that you need for eating because, you know, you can't make certain decrees that people can't withstand. In other words, they had to limit what they would prohibit or people just couldn't. Remember, when the rabbis make a decree, one of the rules is, as much as you want to have a lot of religious zealousness, if you're going to go too extreme, the people will rebel and won't be able to take it. Remember, it's a rabbinic law. It's not Torah from Sinai. The rabbis are saying, we'd like Shabbos to be kept better. Let's be strict. If you're going to be too strict, the people will push back. So obviously, so they limited certain things not to carry in the house, so you won't carry out of the house.
Okay, wouldn't it be worse than that? You'd make Shabbos miserable.
That could maybe be true also.
How could you eat Shabbos meals without carrying utensils?
Well, obviously, they would leave a minimal amount which you could carry, but let's say other things, let's say a book. I don't know. Certain things they wouldn't allow. So they had to limit what you couldn't carry so people could still enjoy the shops. Exactly. So that is the Ravid. The Rambam does not agree with that reason. And now we'll see the Rambam will give us three reasons why we have muktzah. Okay, so let's go back inside. Umipnei ma nagu be'isr zeh. So why did the rabbis come along to bring this prohibition? Amr, they said like this. Uma im hisir nevi'im. If we already know the prophets warned us. It's see when they commanded us, which we just learned yesterday. Shaloya hiluchach b'Shabbos hilucha b'chol. Your walking on Shabbos should not be the same as the way you walk during the weekday. V'losichas haShabbos k'sichas haChol. The way you talk on Shabbos, not the way you talk during the weekday. Shenemar, as we already learned from the pasuk of the prophet, it says v'daber davar, and the you shall speak the words. When you speak differently on Shabbos, so if we have to walk differently on Shabbos and we have to talk differently on Shabbos. So kal v'chomer, the more so, shlo yet tiltul b'Shabbos k'tiltul b'chol. What you move on Shabbos should not be the same what you move during the weekday. Why? Kidei shlo yeh k'yom chol be'enov. So the day should not look in your eyes like a mundane day. And what might you do if it's a mundane day? Of course, you're still not going to do malachas. But still, v'yavo lahagbia ulatake in keli mipino lapino mibayas vayis. You're going to pick up and arrange utensils from one corner of the house to another corner of the house. Olat sniyavon mikios. Or are you going to hide certain rocks or certain things that you want to keep back? So in other words, a person can be busy all day rearranging furniture, doing this, doing that, and all these other things. So therefore, the rabbis limited, just like you walk and talk differently on Shabbos, so you don't carry everything on Shabbos. It's part of the Shabbos mindset. Because if you can carry anything, then people are bored. They got a whole day. They're going to be busy rearranging furniture and picking up things. And I'll take a sack of 50 pounds of flour from the basement and I'll take it upstairs. So that is number one. So it's all part of the general way your activities on Shabbos have to be different than your activities. Just like you can't say good morning on Shabbos. You have to say good Shabbos. So you can't carry certain things. even if you wouldn't come to do a malach at all. It's just, it's a weekday kind of thing, and you just don't pick it up. That's one, to preserve the sanctity of the Shabbos. What?
Don't rearrange furniture on Shabbos even if you want to.
No, I'm saying the guy would do it all day long. I'm not saying you want to move one chair. But I'm saying, like, you really shouldn't do, you know, sometimes our wives get in the mood that they want to, like, just change the whole house. Yeah. We're going to move the couch out of the living room into the den and from the, and the thing, you know, and like, and you're wondering, why are we doing this? It was good the way it was, right? So you can't do that on Shabbos, because that's like really wholesale moving. But you want to just take a chair out of one room or the other room because you need space. Certainly you could do that. But if we didn't have these ideas of muktzah, so then you're just moving stuff all day long. So then it wouldn't be a very Shabbos day. That's reason number one. Shaharei, and why would a person do this? Shrehu Batel, because the guy's got nothing to do on Shabbos. He's sitting in his house. I need something to do. I guess he didn't think of learning Gemara that day.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, there are masses out there, my friend. Not everybody likes to learn Shabbos afternoon. Did you notice that?
But if you take away things right? for them to do, are they just going to sit there and do nothing and sleep, or are they going to then do what we should do?
Well, hopefully they'll do right. other things, so, right? But here's the point. Look at the next line. V'nim sh'shlo Shabbos. It comes out they're not resting on Shabbos. Ubatel hatam shenemar Torah, and will have nullified what the Torah says we want you to do on Shabbos, which is leman yanuach, that you should be in a state of yanuach, resting. Now, resting doesn't mean sleeping, but it means focusing on the goal of life. So if you move things around all day, in other words, you're not going to focus on what Shabbos is all about. So we want you to, you can't do this, so what am I going to do? Think about life. Think about loving Hashem. That's what menucha is. So that's why we don't allow you to do those things. That's reason number one. Yud Gimel gives us reasons number two and three. Ve'od, another reason. Ki sheyevaker v'yataltel kelim shemalachtom le'iser. Let's say, what if you're going to carry certain items that could be used in a prohibited way? Efshir sheyis asik b'hem me'at. You may use a little bit. Ve'yavol de'melach. You come to do an activity. Why can't I carry a nail and a hammer? What's wrong with carrying a hammer? Something wrong. I'm not doing a malacha with a hammer. Am I doing a malacha? No. What about a nail? Nothing wrong with a nail. You got a hammer in your hand. You got a nail in your hand. And you may notice the picture's not exactly in the right order. Well, I got a hammer in my hand. Just, you know, click it and you'll come to a malacha. So that's reason number two. If you keep the items of malacha away, then you're probably not going to do a malacha. That's the second reason. But Ode, and the third, and this is probably the most important, well, another important one. Not everybody works, believe it or not. Some people don't work. They're people of leisure, either unemployed or retired or independently wealthy or whatever. In Kolel, I don't know. But they're not working. Right? Okay, anyway, I shouldn't have said that. Elevatelim call you man. They don't work all day long.
We'll edit that out of the table.
Now he says, Kigon, he gives you the examples. Hatayolim, the Tayolim are tourists. Right? You're going to Israel for 2 weeks. You're a tourist, right? Yoshvei Kronos, and the guys who sit at the corners. You know, the corners, the schmoozers, the guys who sit at the Leidekayers, okay? Shekol Yemeimim shows him love all their days, they're not doing any work. I figure, so they work a day in their life? No. Now, Vim Yemutu Lahalach Ladaber Latal Tokeshar Yamim. See if you can go around and talk and go and carry things like you carry your own week long. It comes out you're not resting in a way that's discernible because you're doing exactly what you do during the weekday. How's your behavior any different than on a weekday? Weekday you don't work, today you don't work. Weekday you pick up a tape recorder and Shabbos you pick up a tape recorder, even if you don't put it on. So how can you tell that today is Shabbos? You're not doing anything that shows that it's Shabbos. Lafikach therefore, Shvisa midvarim ela, ceasing from these things, he shvisa hashavach adam. This is a resting that's equal to all people. And for these reasons, we touched upon the reason to not be able to move certain items. For us, and therefore, they prohibited shalotal talon b'shabbos elakelim hatzorach lahem k'moshi yisboer. And therefore, the rabbis prohibited carrying utensils except utensils that you need, as we'll explain in the next chapter.
So it seems like it's mostly the middle reason that we
Well, there's four reasons.
No, but
the Rabbi gives one, the Rambam gives three, and they're all good reasons.
The middle one
is maybe you'll work.
Well, yeah, that you can't touch something that doesn't have a Shabbos purpose.
But we will see that there are certain things that are muktzah that has nothing to do with work. We will see. There's certain types of muktzah, let's say something that's very valuable, that you'd be very worried to not use, which we'll see, where you wouldn't come to work and we still prohibit it. So we will see. So it's not exclusively things that are used
for... If you were going to wear an expensive piece of jewelry, you're allowed to pick it up.
So we'll see. We've
got
to learn two chapters.
Sorry,
but it's not... Many things that are muktzah have nothing to do with the fact that you would work. I'll tell you a good example, right? A rock that is in the parking lot is muktzah.
Yes.
Now, what work are you going to do with a rock in a city that has an Eruv?
Nothing.
All right? So no work going to happen, but you still can't use it. So we have to understand, there's a deeper understanding of what muktzah means.
You can touch it, you just can't move it?
You can touch anything. You can see and you can touch, but you cannot move.
Okay? So you can't hold it. You can't hold it in your hand.
Holding it would require you to move it off of the table. Theoretically, if it fell down from the heaven and landed in your hand, you could hold it.
Yes.
Okay, but generally speaking, you can't move it, right? So we will see. There's going to be lots to learn. So let's just learn the first halacha. Let's just jump into the next one. Perek Hamishas, right? Just another 2 minutes. These are all easy halachas, first beginning at least. 25th chapter. Aleph. Yesh kli shemalachto laheter. There's a utensil. Now you got to get used to the terms now. There's four or five terms. You got to know the Hebrew because I can't keep explaining them in English. And this is the first one. First of all, kli means a utensil. Shemalachto, that its use, its work is laheter, a permittable use. That's going to be the most lenient type of utensil. So remember the words, kli, shemalachto, laheter. A utensil that is used to do normally permitted actions on Shabbos. And now he's going to explain it. Vua kli, shemutter, lasusul, b'shabbos. It's a utensil that you may use on Shabbos. Dover shasal will hold just like using the weekday. Could go on, for example, kos lishuspo, a cup to drink from. That's a utensil that you're allowed to use on Shabbos. Ukaara, and a plate, lechbo, to eat from. Visakin, lachtochbo, basa rapas, and a knife to cut meat and bread. Vikornos lipsobo gozim, and a specially made hammer to cut, to smash, they didn't have fancy nutcrackers. They had hammer crackers. Not hammer crackers, whatever. Whatever you want to call it. Call it a hatchet?
They do call it a hatchet.
Okay, but it's a specific item to crack nuts. Okay, I guess
he says here patish. He has here below in our thing.
So that's a hammer. Yeah. Patish, but obviously you're going to see in a minute he's going to talk about hammer as a klishim lachtel iser too. It means a hammer that's a smaller hammer, obviously. They didn't have fancy nutcrackers. How did they crack open a nut on Shabbos, right? So you have a little hammer that cracks it open, but it was like designated to be a nutcracker hammer.
The footnote's interesting. It say they especially use hatchet so it doesn't get confused with a regular hammer.
Okay, fine.
That's why they use the translation.
Okay, but anyway, it's a special one. But what's the idea? Ukayesh are similar things. In other words, normal things you're allowed to eat on Shabbos, so what utensils? That's called a kli shemalachto leheter. Base. V'yesh kli shemalachto le'iser. Now this utensil that's called a kli shemalachto, that its use is for prohibited uses, which you can't do. And that's a utensil that you can't use it on Shabbos, because if you use it, you would do a malacha. Kigon, for example, machteshes, a grinder, v'rechaim, in a mill, u'kiyaitzvim, or similarly, she'osr lichtoish v'litcham b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to grind and mill on Shabbos. So that is a kli shemalachto le'iser, and that has a different status. So we will learn that each one has separate laws. So next Sunday we will learn the laws of kli shemalachto le'heter, kli shemalachto le'iser, and then we're going to talk about something that's not a kli. And that's, we're going to slowly get into all the different types of kelim and the different laws that apply to them. Have a wonderful, wonderful, long weekend. We have a meeting.